we need to continue to evolve and stay ahead of the challenges we're facing. And those kind of models tell us that we've got a way to go collectively. And if you happen to be one of those Nelson Mandelas or someone like that, and you don't need to develop much, you need to bring people along behind you.
This is the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nestle and Associates, a Newport Beach, California-based ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. The ERP OCJ seeks to share expertise, insight, experience, and research, and to create effective conversation to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success. And now, here's your ERP expert and host, the founder of Nestle and Associates, Dr. Jack Nestle.
Jack here. Welcome back to another wonderful conversation. And if you're new to our podcast, thank you so much for joining us. We are delighted to have our next guest. Leadership is her expertise. In this episode, we will discuss ERP organizational change, how leaders can prepare, with Maureen Metcalf. We'll focus on some key notions that she discusses in her blog titled, How Leaders Can Prepare Themselves for a Digital Transformation. Maureen is founder, CEO, and board chair of the Innovative Leadership Institute, formerly Metcalf and Associates. She has assisted top Fortune 1500 companies and multi-billion dollar technology firms through transformation initiatives. In addition to working as an executive advisor, Maureen designs and teaches MBA classes in leadership and organizational transformation. She is also the host of an international radio show focusing on innovative leadership and the author of an award-winning book series, including The Innovative Leader's Guide to Transforming Organizations. And before founding Metcalf and Associates, she worked for PricewaterhouseCoopers and Accenture, building strong business acumen and consulting skills. Joining us from Columbus, Ohio, Maureen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jack. I am delighted that you've included me in your really important podcast.
Well, thank you so much. We can't wait to share some of your insight with our listeners, and we appreciate your time. So let's get started. Maureen, first of all, please tell us more and introduce yourself to our listeners.
Thank you, Jack. So just briefly, I am the CEO and founder of the Innovative Leadership Institute. And to ground that a little bit, we renamed probably about 5 years ago, as we're looking at the volume of change people are facing and that it's accelerating change and larger scale, my belief is that leaders need to innovate or update how they lead. And many leaders are so busy running their organizations and staying current on their industry. So physician leaders stay current in their healthcare domain. Technology leaders stay current in technology. And yet many of them spend most of their time actually doing the art of leading, and they don't invest the same amount of time to stay current in their primary role of leadership. So our focus is helping leaders update. And for technologists, I would say it's updating your algorithm. So just like I'm not using an old phone or a version of Windows or Microsoft that's 10 years old, I also can't have my thinking algorithm be 10 years old in an era where we're changing so quickly.
That is fascinating. And I can't wait to dig in further here, Maureen. So interesting. So first, I'd like to share a blog you wrote. In fact, a couple of them. You wrote a blog called Leaders Must Now Think Like Scientists. And in this blog, you state that, quote, during the Industrial Revolution, leaders managed effectively using command and control and leveraging best practices to solve problems that were common across multiple industries. Now, however, the most effective leaders work more like scientists. They scan best practices, but also create competitive advantage by creating new and innovative solutions in the face of chaos. And then, Maureen, you also had mentioned in another blog called Six Key Recommendations to Address Current Business and Social Challenges. You had mentioned that we need to learn from the best models, frameworks, and people who are already making a significant impact. So I think this goes to your response to your intro, in that leadership and practicing best leadership takes a little bit of work, a little bit of reflection. So if you could please explain more to our listeners the value of thinking like scientists and applying proven frameworks, and perhaps a little bit of a reflection.
Brilliant. Thank you. So one, I just really appreciate that you have prepared so much for our conversation and really forces me to be much more reflective. So the idea of we need to think like scientists, I wrote this before the pandemic, but it really illustrates the challenges we're facing that we as leaders, the last time we had a global pandemic or a global health issue of this kind of magnitude was the early 1900s. So we can't now look back to what happened back then with the Spanish flu because of global travel. So the spread of the disease was more rapid and harder to predict because we didn't have those best practices necessarily for something like a global pandemic, because we just, fortunately, we hadn't had to deal with that. So it would seem conflicting to look at best practices and say then we don't have best practices. So I am a big fan of using evidence-based research from areas that can be applied. It may just not be directly related. From the pandemic, one of the things that's really come out, and it addresses the point you made earlier about command and control, that leaders who struggled and their organizations who struggled were those who took a very definitive stance where the pandemic's going to last for 2 weeks and you're going to go home and then we're all going to be back in the office. And many of those leaders continue to take similar definitive stances. We're going to be back in the office in November. Oops, Omicron happens. So it's an interesting balance of being decisive about my hypothesis rather than decisive about what's going to happen. So we're going to work toward being back in the office on January 1st, and we're going to continue to monitor the environment and refine our approach to ensure we maximize your safety. Something like that, that still leaves me as a leader sounding like I know what I'm doing. Because I think a lot of leaders either felt lost or felt like being a good leader means I have to make strong statements and just hope like heck that I'm able to deliver. When in fact, we're finding that people trust leaders who are able to make definitive enough statements. So it's not saying, I don't have a clue what we're doing, but rather this is what we're working toward and we're going to continue to monitor. Does that resonate, Jack, with what you're looking for?
That does. Yeah, that's a fantastic insight. I love it. The whole idea about definitive stances and the comment you made, and I wrote it down here because I'm going to borrow that quote and really think about that because that's so interesting. But, you know, this idea of stances based on being decisive about your hypothesis versus being decisive about what's going to happen. Very interesting statement.
Thank you.
So then I think my next question is in terms of leaders elevating their leadership quality, what would be the first step that a leader must take in terms of this? I guess it would be vertical development, right? So I'm a leader. You know, you had mentioned in your first response that sometimes leaders get caught up in their more technical role of their job. You know, doctors be good doctors and engineers want to be good engineers and you practice your trade. But at the same time, if you're a leader, it is true. There's a lot out there, both in the form of anecdotal evidence, but also in terms of research. But how do we get there? How do we take that next step? And, or I should say, what would be the very first step for leaders in terms of vertical development?
So I want to level set because I think the term vertical development isn't a commonly understood term, or people have different meanings for it. So vertical is actually, if we think about Jim Collins and the idea of level 5 leadership, that there are actually shifts in our meaning-making algorithm. So if we think about how we made sense of the world when we graduated from high school and how that changed to graduated from college and how that changed after you had your first child, as an example, for people who've done that path, we actually start to see the world differently. And vertical is that difference in meaning making, where horizontal is getting better at our craft, and both are required. So I realize that some of my work preferences vertical because there are a lot of people doing a great job already at horizontal. So with that as the grounding, one of the first things I recommend is start with understanding a vertical model. So what does this mean? And the research says just by even understanding the model, people can start in their minds moving toward the next step because they know what more effective looks like and they know what less effective looks like. And I'm going to take a risk here and suggest that more effective and less effective in the leadership realm, that this isn't a place where we actually need evidence-based models. And during an era where our environment, especially political environment, is so divisive, I don't think we as organizational leaders have a shared view of what effective looks like. So if you think our current president is brilliant, then you thought the last guy was not. If you thought the last guy is brilliant, you're really worried right now. So that points to a significant difference. When we walk in the door at work every day, we've got, let's call it a 50-50 split. I don't know what the real numbers are, but relatively equal amounts of people who think one thing is good and who think something very different is good. So if I'm running an organization, I want to bring people together around how we define effective. So pick a model. I happen to think the vertical development models are foundational. And there's some research that says if people aren't at a certain level of maturity, they are unlikely to transform and sustain multiple transformations. So we've all seen people by brute force who change stuff. The question is, 5 years from now, will that change stick and will people be building on it? And will it continue to make the organization better? So all of that as the context, understand the model, understand what I'm looking toward, and then take an assessment. And there are a few really good assessments. One is the MAP by, I'm going to say vertical development. I can send you the link. The Stages model by Stages International and Stage Shift at stageshift.coach. The first two are incredibly robust, human scored, more expensive, and take longer to get, but really hard to game. So when you get a score, if I am not self-aware, my lack of self-awareness doesn't translate to the score. On any assessment where I self-score, so I answer a bunch of multiple choice questions, for many people, especially super smart leaders, it's easy to project where I think I'm supposed to be versus where I am. And so I am cautious in my recommendations with regard to how precise I need to be in my scoring. If I'm working with a senior executive and I'm looking at succession, precision may be more important. If I'm working with someone who's developing as a leader, they're doing great, we're just looking at moving them to the next level, precision may not be as important. And so we can do a different assessment that is less expensive, easier, because I take a multiple choice assessment and I get my score back immediately. So I do balance. And I think all of them, the three I recommended, are all really good choices. Last thing, then once I know my score, work with a coach or a team partner. It doesn't require paying a coach. What I need is somebody who understands the framework, goes through it with me, and is preferably slightly higher on the scale than I am, so they can model the behaviors that I'm trying to reach.
That is interesting. Maureen, I really liked what you said to start off the answer to the question. So thank you for that. But it was the idea of horizontal and vertical development and kind of level setting on the idea of vertical development. Great point. And I really liked your point, this idea of level setting on the definition of effective leadership. That was a great point and great insight. And I think that if I had to summarize, and I apologize, I don't want to not do your insight no justice or improper justice. But if I had to distill your summary or your response into a sentence, would this be fair? It would be to understand the model, understand what you are working, and in other words, understand what your goals are, right? Understand what you mean by leadership, but then you need to be willing to reflect and then measure. And then once you do that, you need to execute intentional practice.
Perfect summation. And let me add one additional piece, because we're such a competitive society that we think higher is better. This, especially vertical, is about fit for role.
Yeah.
So you don't want Albert Einstein as your receptionist.
Right.
Right. You don't want your Dalai Lama as the Dalai Lama as your CEO, because he probably doesn't care about quarterly profits.
Yeah.
You know, there are just mismatches where, especially with vertical development, too developed isn't good for every job.
Good point. Fascinating insight. So now what I'd like to do, Maureen, is I'd like to take the next few questions and share with our listeners some key notions in a blog that you wrote that was titled How Leaders Can Prepare Themselves for a Digital Transformation. So now we're going to take some of your expertise and insight as it pertains to leadership, but maybe talk a little bit in the context of a digital transformation. And in that blog, you share some ideas that I would like to share. It says, to be prepared for transformation, I believe leaders must update their mindsets and behaviors. Below are my suggestions for getting started. I'm going to share these 7 different suggestions, and then I'd like to ask you some specific questions on a couple of these. The first one is focus on what's best for your organization. The second is be prepared to make tough decisions. That's very true. Number 3 is think critically. Number 4 is stay curious. Number 5, develop yourself and others. 6, inspire others. And 7, lastly, learn from other perspectives. And one of the things, Maureen, you know as well as I do, that these large-scale digital transformations and ERP organizational change, it's not just about technology and it's not just about the right process or the right project management tactics, although those are incredibly valuable, incredibly important. There's these, sometimes I would call them intangible pieces, right, that are more invisible and hard to see and a little more abstract. And I think that's really some of the ideas that you're touching on here. So for your first one, you state that, again, focus on what's best for your organization. How does any organization know if they're actually focusing on what's best for them?
So hopefully leaders know. And so let me give a couple examples. One, this is based on the developmental research. So when we talk about vertical development, these characteristics are drawn from the leadership level called strategist that the research suggests is the most effective at transforming complex organizations. So that's kind of where this came from. This idea of focus on what's best for the organization compared to what's best for me. So this is about humility, caring about getting it right ahead of being right. And let me give an example, and I draw from our current public situation, so the pandemic. And please know that I am not intending to make any kind of a political statement, but I'm going to use Dr. Fauci and the idea that during the pandemic, when the science changed, he quickly reported the new science, even though for many people that caused him to lose credibility in their eyes. That guy keeps changing his mind. So I think I can say without offending people that for the chief scientist to say we've gathered new information and our recommendations are changing is best for the organization, in this case being the citizens of the United States. Mm-hmm. This getting it right. For many of us, we know what our mission is for the organization. It's really taking decisions and refining decisions to align with how do we accomplish the vision and the mission and the strategic goals. And the way you frame the question points out that this is not always obvious and not always easy.
Yeah, so true. I think you illustrated the point well. So Maureen, this is a good one here. I like the next one. Be prepared to make tough decisions. And so my question there would be, again, how do leaders handle this exactly? I mean, what are some ways in which leaders can be prepared to make tough decisions? And again, this is all to remind our listeners, these points or these recommendations that you're providing here, I guess these suggestions are all in the context of ERP organizational change, or which is really a form of digital transformation. And they're pretty important points. But why in the context of digital transformation is it important that leaders be prepared to make tough decisions? Why is that so relevant? And how do you handle that?
So if we think about an ERP, we're often changing business processes. We're changing jobs. We're in some cases exiting people or exiting roles, hiring new people, new roles. So it's not just that I'm turning a switch on a software system. I am fundamentally changing the workflow for my organization in some cases, and that's going to impact my customers. It's going to impact my employees. It's going to impact morale. If we look at the volume of change, one of the things we did with a large organization where I led the change management efforts for an ERP was looked at the volume of change by role. And by understanding kind of the stakeholder analysis, we did basically the job change first, and then we automated. So we said, okay, the customer service reps, inside sales, we're going to have the greatest amount of change. So we're going to staff to the new level and have them do the new work using Excel sheets. And then when we implement the ERP, they're just going to be turning on a computer system. So part of it is having a very clear sense of what impact am I making on the organization and how is that going to ripple through? And the beauty and the curse of an ERP is I make a change in one part of the system and it really does ripple through the entire organization. And so what we did with this organization is, and this was a steel manufacturing plant, so complex organization, we charted the entire business process. So this is the old fashioned big wall charts, you know, floor to ceiling kind of thing, and did it in kind of the swim lane approach and looked at the magnitude of change. You know, we moved the boxes around. We understood the changes for each part of the organization. We time-phased it. You know, we sliced the data in all kinds of ways. And so in that case, part of the preparing for the decisions was having enough information and understanding the organization's values, understanding the culture. So think about how many ERPs you've seen fail because the organization, when it met resistance, it didn't have the staying power. Or the implementation happens and the leaders are exited. So as you pointed out at the beginning, getting through an implementation is tough in the best of situations. And often when these decisions are made, the implications are significant as they ripple through the organization.
Well said. I couldn't agree more. So what about think critically? Your point number three, how do leaders do that? And why is that so important in a digital transformation?
I think I want to go back to the idea that especially with an ERP, you're making a systems change. So where with other process changes or business changes, you can often go off in your department and make a change, and it doesn't ripple through the entire enterprise. So specifically with an ERP, leaders need to step back and understand the complexity of the entire organization and how a single change rolls through, and then understand the humans that are impacted. So especially right now in a time where we're having trouble attracting and retaining people, we are no longer in that we're just going to tell them what to do and give them a sandbox and let them go practice and it's going to happen. If we don't allow people input, if we don't consider how they're going to be impacted by the system changes, the process changes, and do the work to keep them engaged, we are likely to lose them at the point in time where we most need our most experienced people. So thinking critically to me means looking at the culture, looking at the technology systems, looking at the business processes, and looking at the precious human beings who are showing up and trying to do their jobs to make sure that the customers get what they are committing to.
Yeah. So in a way, thinking critically is being open-minded, being innovative, being creative. And then, you know, from a leadership perspective is kind of promoting and endorsing that attitude throughout the organization. Allow your team to think critically. And I think sometimes that just takes that ability to take a step back, see the big picture and see what the impact is up and downstream, but also to allow people to be creative and think of new ways to do things. You know, at the end of the day, after all, that's the value of a new ERP system, is to allow you to maybe reassess the way you do business, look for ways to improve your processes. And that certainly requires a great degree of critical thinking, I would say.
I absolutely agree. And so part of it is engaging people who may not have had a voice before, yeah, and giving space for the idea that everyone in the organization may have a brilliant idea. Now, it is often related to their job expertise. So I'm not going to ask a frontline employee what our business strategy should be, but I should darn well make sure I understand their recommendations for improvement in their scope.
Great point. So what about the next one? I really like this one. You don't often hear it phrased this way in regards to ERP or digital transformation, but why stay curious? Why is that relevant?
So, you know, we hear a lot now about the idea of a growth mindset. When I'm implementing an ERP, I will learn a lot about my business, about the people with whom I'm working, about the culture, about our external stakeholders like business partners. And every time I learn, I'm able to make better decisions. So this absolutely feeds into critical thinking,
yeah,
and also reduces my own resistance to the changes that are happening. Because even if I'm in a significant role of implementation, I'm going to have some biases as well. And when I hit something that I think, I can't believe that person just did that, or, you know, whatever the thing is, instead of getting annoyed, which we've all done, asking, I wonder why, rather than what an idiot. And that shift in stance gets a lot better results. And often I find it's a good thing I didn't say what an idiot, because I was the one who didn't understand. So being open to my own lack of knowledge and keeping my mouth shut is a beautiful thing.
Well said. And, you know, the idea that as leaders, it kind of circles back to, like you were saying, this idea of vertical development, your answer to our first two questions, that leaders must be open to the fact that they don't always know everything, right? And if you stay curious, you're asking lots of questions and you're learning and you're leading by example, actually, right? Because when you do that, then your organization will follow lead and they'll do that. And now you are creating an organizational culture of innovation and creativity and thinking critically. So that's a good one. I really like that one. What about develop yourself and others? How does that come into play for an ERP or digital transformation?
So if we go back to something like the book Good to Great, and I'll reference that because it's been on the New York Times business bestseller list for like a decade. I don't know where it is now, but I assume people have read it or at least have heard things like level 5 leadership. So the research suggests that between 1.5% and 4% of leaders are actually at that level. And so if that's what's required to transform organizations, one, as a country, as a global community, we don't have enough. So even for leaders who are really successful, as the world continues to change, we need to continue to evolve and stay ahead of the challenges we're facing. And those kind of models tell us that we've got a way to go collectively. And if you happen to be one of those Nelson Mandelas or someone like that, and you don't need to develop much, you need to bring people along behind you. And yeah, one of the things that's interesting is people who are most developed generally have a passion for development, or they wouldn't be so developed. And so they do keep evolving themselves, who they are as a person, and how they lead. And people gravitate to them because of that commitment. People who are learning and growing want to be surrounded by people learning and growing. And as it relates to ERP, those are the people that are going to be most successful implementing.
Yeah. And I think that leads us to the next one here. And this is a good one, but that's inspire others. Why is that so important? And do you have any tactical advice on how to do that?
You know, we talked as we started, if I think of people who inspire me, one of the things they do is tell me the truth. They're authentic. They're reflective. They are trustworthy. It doesn't mean they always have the answers, but I'm inspired by people who can be authentic enough. I'm not saying share every thought, because none of us wants to hear that from everyone. Especially, we don't want, as leaders, to overshare when we're uncomfortable with what's happening. I'm not saying dump your inner thoughts, but I am saying the authenticity and vulnerability that when I'm struggling with something, I ask for help. When I find I made a mistake, I own it and I correct it in a way that is professionally appropriate for a leader. When we can do that, we model that when we're implementing an ERP, stuff's going to go wrong. It does not matter how much you pay your consulting firm, how good they are, how many years you've been doing this, stuff goes wrong. And so when I'm able to demonstrate those tactics of authentic, reflective, trustworthy, humility, then people are inspired to take the risk, to step in and make mistakes. Back to the mind of a scientist. Good scientists don't blow themselves up. They have a hypothesis, they test it, and they course correct as they go. So what they're really good at is, one, formulating the right hypothesis, and then running small enough experiments that they are directionally correct and always moving forward, even if they need to course correct some.
Yeah. You know, it's the idea that being authentic and reflective and trustworthy as a leader, one of the things that does is certainly not only inspires others, but it also leads to trust, right? It creates and promotes trust. And I think that one of the biggest, qualities a leader can have during an ERP organizational change is trust. Because like you said, things go wrong. There's no such thing as 100% perfect ERP organizational change effort. And there's always something. But when things do go wrong, you want to have that leader you can trust. And, you know, and that comes with being authentic, reflective, listening, being trustworthy. And, you know, that basically arms you with the right tools to lead your team through some pretty challenging times. So that's well said.
And your summation is brilliantly captures what I think crystallizes the comments.
Yeah, there's been quite a bit of work, and especially in the context of ERP and organizational change specifically, in this idea of trust, in leading others with trust. And I personally think that that's probably one of the most significant attributes that a leadership team can have going through a large scale ERP organizational change effort. I think people undervalue that idea often. Here's another favorite: learn from other perspectives. So we know that a culture of innovation and learning is crucial, as we've discussed. And you have some nice articles in a blog called How to Create a Culture of Innovation and Learning. I want to circle back on that topic. You know, when you talk about develop yourself and others and stay curious, I think in all of your responses, this idea of innovation and learning has come up. So I'm going to refer back to a blog that you did. I believe it was back in 2017. And again, we'll share this link with our listeners. But can you share some practical pointers with our listeners in terms of learning from others and creating a learning organization in general?
So a lot of this, again, the 7 points you spelled out really intertwine. So a lot of this is about collaboration. And if I am working as a scientist, I realize I don't have all of the answers. And if we look at the pandemic as a good opportunity to elaborate, that scientists from around the world were collecting data on people who were infected with COVID. And so what helped us find vaccines sooner was that scientists shared the data that I realized first and foremost, back to that humility, I know when I need to ask questions, I know when I don't have the answers, and I know how to convene or pull the right people together and structure the conversations to get valuable solutions to what we're doing. And part of that means I have to entertain points of view that are very different than mine, and in some cases, be willing to let go of how I see things. And Jack, I'll say, if you tell me something and it's not what I thought you would say, and I don't want to hear it, I've got to be curious, ask why you think that, and actually seek out people who see the world differently, because that allows us to create more robust solutions than we would have with a bunch of like-minded people or me sitting in my office by myself. So for me, it's really creating an environment where people are encouraged to share different points of view. They feel that they're valued. They actually have to be valued. And it doesn't mean that everything everyone says gets implemented, but we create this environment where people understand where the solution came from. So I'll pull something from this person and that person, and we will collectively participate in a process that allows all of us to learn and grow.
And, you know, we know that innovation, creativity, and learning promotes organizational performance and also organizational agility. And we know that leadership and organizational agility is a critical influence for organizational success and ultimate survival. So how does a leader integrate agility into their organizational culture? So kind of taking that step from the last question regarding innovation and learning, how does that promote agility? And then how does a leader integrate that agility into their organizational culture?
So I'm going to go back to a definition and say, for me, often we change culture by making explicit the agreements about how we work together. And so it is having agreements about things like, where do ideas come from? Codifying processes so that people have a way to make recommendations about changes. I met with a group of clients 2 days ago, and one of their questions was specifically, how do we promote innovation? And so now the senior executive team in each weekly meeting will address the recommendations that have come from their organization. But then the question is, how do you get people in the organization to make recommendations? So, and how do you vet them so the senior team isn't equally looking at complaints about the toilet paper quality and some big process change? So I think there's a balance looking at these. To me, the leadership qualities bake in agility. If I am taking the mind of a scientist, if I have a decision process that allows me to move forward with experiments rather than having consensus, and that's a big one in the organizational agreements. So if we as a group of leaders can say, okay, I don't necessarily agree with you, but we don't have a better solution, we're going to go do an experiment, and then we're going to come back together and reevaluate. That significantly accelerates the agility and the pace that we're able to move forward. So I've got a lot more room to function, and it is through agreements. And every leadership team I've worked with where we introduce this kind of, we agree to experiment, and then we agree to make a final decision, it significantly accelerates the learning process and just the speed to results.
And doesn't that also promote the acceptance of failure, or at least managing failure? You know, because the more agile you are and the more you improve your pace to be agile, you're probably going to fail more, right? The more you experiment, I should say, you're going to encounter failure. Aren't you essentially by that process that you've discussed, where you take this mindset of a scientist, you move forward with experiment and experimentation, that definitely improves agility and the pace in which you move forward. But at the same time, it allows you to be innovative and creative and fail and then learn from those failures, and you accept those failures and learn from them.
And so I'm taking slight exception to the word failure, because good scientists don't fail a lot. They will be directionally correct, not perfect. Yeah. And the other is, again, this mindset. So I worked with a researcher in, I'm going to get the name wrong, so I'll say in hearing, and she's a hardcore researcher. And she once made the observation that if my experiments prove that I'm completely off track, then the quicker I do those experiments and prove myself wrong, the quicker I can get about helping people hear better. So yeah. It is a really embracing of, I'm doing experiments to learn, because as soon as we start to call it failure when I'm not perfect, we're back to the old command and control. You have to be right, or you're a loser.
Yeah.
And
great point.
The only biggest loser thing should be on weight loss.
Well said. That's such a great point. I love your exception there. That's fantastic. Maureen, you share on your website too, and I want to share this quote with our listeners because it's really factual. But you say that most projects have a 70 to 80% probability of failure, but that you can increase that probability of success to 80%. So if you could just briefly, and to challenge you a little bit here, Maureen, if you had to provide one single influence that could improve that success rate, just one, what would it be?
You know, that statistic actually came from some work by McKinsey, and there were certainly more than one thing.
Yeah.
One that stood out, and I may give more than one, but one that stood out is shifting from the mindset of there's a burning platform, we're moving out of the station, do what I tell you, or we're going to run you over. And I realize people say it a little nicer, but that's the tone. Versus the thing we talked about, inspiring leadership, setting up an environment where people are enabled and they participate, where they don't, I mean, there is still failure. So I'm not going to say there's no failure. People can flame out. But for people who are making deliberate choices, they're continuing to learn, and in creating an environment where people are, so to me, it's a culture of this learning and growth and agility. When we have that culture and people are supporting one another, then the probability of innovating, and this comes from the work of Jim Ritchie Dunham and his book on Ecosonomics, and he looks at some key relationships, but it really comes down to, do I support my colleagues in their learning and growth? Because when we are making changes, we're going to mess stuff up. I'm going to be trying something new and I'm going to get it wrong. Mm-hmm. I updated my Microsoft today and blew up my calendar, and just stuff goes wrong. And if we don't have an environment where it's acceptable to make mistakes, if I'm humiliated and now I have to quit because I'm such an idiot, then we never succeed. So for me, it is about creating an environment that is accepting and supportive of learning and growth.
Yeah, that well said. That was a bit of a trick question that I think is almost impossible to answer simply because there's, like you said, there's too many variables, which is really a part of the point to be made, I think. And I think, again, through vertical development, reflection, taking maybe the scientist mindset, as you describe, and, you know, there's a lot for leaders to reflect on and really think about, but it's a pretty big question. So you've obviously done some great work. I'm a fan of your work. I really like your perspective on leadership and how you approach your practice. But if you could distill down your work and, you know, your years of work, your years of practice, your years of research, and just provide some advice to our listeners in the field of ERP organizational change, what would you tell them? What would be your advice, your main takeaway of this conversation today?
I'd start with ERP implementation is really, really important for organizations to be effective meeting their missions. So congratulations on doing work that's meaningful. It's also hard. And so that idea that I mentioned in the last question of have a network of support and resources like you're providing, Jack, so that people have a trusted place to go when they're struggling. Because we all have brilliant days where we feel like we're on top of the world, and we have days where we feel like we just, you know, entered a Mad Max movie and got backed over by a truck. And that's the reality I think most of us face. So having thought partners who you trust to really think through what you're doing, I think is helpful. And one of the tactics that was very helpful for me is the stakeholder mapping, having a really clear understanding of who's being impacted from each key stakeholder group. Because again, these are human beings whose lives we're impacting. They spend more time at work often than they do any place else in their life. And the more we can meet them with respect and offer the tools so that they can do what we're asking them to do with the system, the more likely we will have a successful implementation. Because back to that 70 to 80% probability of failure, the systems get implemented. That the systems are there. So the failure isn't, is it a yes, no? It's we're not delivering the business value. And having done this enough, we just create a massive amount of pain for people. We create distrust and ill will and disengagement. And then we expect people to show up and give us their best. And if we don't do this well, this ERP implementation, we lose their confidence, and it's really hard to win that back.
So true. There's a lot to be said about empathy and this ERP organizational change. There is a lot of stress, and once people get stressed and they're working, they're not getting the resources and the support that they need. There can be a lack of motivation, conflict, lack of confidence. And, people come in, they work hard every day, they're trying to do their day job. And on top of that, you're trying to take on a pretty significant project. And that needs to be well considered. And you have to approach that with empathy.
I love the idea of empathy. Yeah. And, the upside is this is a brilliant opportunity to demonstrate to your leadership team or as a leader your ability to implement a large program. It's a great learning opportunity. Yeah. For people who are interested, I think it's a really brilliant experience, and you'll lose a year of your life doing it. So, or more.
Well, Maureen, thank you so much for your time. We really do appreciate it. I'm really humbled and appreciate your time. And thanks for sharing with us today. And for our listeners, please be sure to check out, and Maureen, correct me if I'm wrong, but innovativeleadershipinstitute.com, correct?
Perfect. Yes. Thank you.
All right. And then can you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you? What would be the best route to take?
So you can either email me at, we're in the process of changing things. So it would be mmetcalf@innovativeleadership.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn is not changing anything, so you can always find me there.
Sounds good.
Just put in the note that you listen to this podcast so that I won't think you're trying to sell me something.
Fantastic. Appreciate it. And we'll be sure to include your contact information in our show notes as well. Thank you again. And we really appreciate your time. Be well, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Jack. And thank you to your listeners who are doing such important work.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of the ERP OCJ podcast. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change successes and challenges. We discuss the people, process, and technological components of ERP organizational change by drawing on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner expertise and experience. We are incredibly grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us in our podcast as we seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP organizational change community and contribute to its success by bringing research and practice closer together. We want to make sure this is the most useful and insightful ERP podcast you listen to, and we'd love your help in doing so by leaving us feedback and a review. A great place to do so is at Apple Podcasts. Just click on the Listen in Apple Podcasts link, then click Ratings and Reviews, and let us know your thoughts. You can get more info about the show, including show notes and episode highlights for this and all of our episodes, by visiting nesselandassociates.com and clicking the podcast option. Please join us again next week as we discuss the latest ERP organizational change research, practice, and stories. And don't forget to follow us on social media, #TheERPOCJ. Thanks again for listening. Have a fantastic week.